from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Syria is on everyone's mind, and this week on Register Radio, Jeanette DiMello talks with the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton, about the Vatican's reaction to the Syria crisis. Also, recent Vatican news, including Pope Francis's choice of a new Vatican Secretary of State and Blessed John Paul II's canonization date. Also, Jeanette talks with Register Senior Editor Joan Frawley Desmond about the U.S. reaction to Syria through the use of force, despite a lack of international support and the Vatican's appeal to nonviolent response. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the Register. Hi, Jeanette.
Hello, Tom.
Howdy. Our first guest today, Edward Penton, is the Register's Rome correspondent. He has covered the Register's Vatican news for the last 10 years. Prior to that, Edward reported for Vatican Radio. His work has appeared in Newsweek, Newsmax, Zenit, and other publications. Today, we're going to talk about Pope Francis's recent appointments in Vatican governance, Benedict XVI's meeting with his former students earlier this week, and the September 7th date of prayer for peace in Syria. Edward, welcome back to Register Radio.
Hi, good to be with you again.
Now, Edward, the Vatican's vacation is now over. Summer is over at the Vatican. It's very busy there these days. Pope Francis stayed in Rome for a vacation, or his staycation, we should say, and now that September has started, he has been quite busy. Tell us about his appointments this week.
Right, Jeanette. Yes, well, the main one, as most listeners will probably know by now, is the appointment of a Secretary of State who's replacing Cardinal Bartone. He appointed Archbishop Pietro Parolin, who's an Italian diplomat, who's currently papal nuncio in Venezuela, to take over from Cardinal Bartone with almost immediate effect, not until actually October the 15th, to give him time for the transition. But that's the main appointment. And it's been very well received. He's quite a popular diplomat, and I think he's very well suited with his background and experience to the role.
Yes, you wrote a story for the Register we published, I think, earlier this week. Our listeners can find it on ncregister.com. And you talk about him being very highly credentialed, and also that he's the youngest Secretary of State since 1930. Give us a little more information about Archbishop Parolin.
Yes, that's right. He's 58 years old, and he's the youngest since Cardinal Eugenio Pacelli, who, of course, became Pius XII. He's been chosen, I believe, because he's very much of the same mind as the Holy Father. He's he's got the same sort of international perspective as the Holy Father, and he very much wants to reach out to those on the margins and to be very inclusive, to bring in those who are kind of excluded on the international scene, particularly in relations with the Holy See. So, for example, nations like China, for example, when he was undersecretary at these relations with states and the Secretariat of State, which he served in the 2000s, he was very effective in actually reaching out to China, and was quite, there was a kind of turning point with relations with China during his time there. So there's very much hope that he can do something in that regard, but also with other nations too. He was on the Iranian desk as well. He was very effective in reaching out to the Iranians, and also with other issues too. For example, connected with human trafficking, he was very good at working with the U.S. Embassy at that time to the Holy See, working with them on trying to combat human trafficking, and did a lot in that regard. There's a sister here who does a lot of work with them on this issue, Sister Eugenia Bonetti. Who's absolutely thrilled by his appointment, because she sees that there could be some real headway made on that issue. There's a big conference coming up on that issue in November, and he'll be in position by then. So that all augurs well as well.
That's really, it's really great. We're all looking forward to see what he does. Now, he has to fill the role that has been played by Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone for the last several years. He was appointed in 2006 by Pope Benedict, and he's faced many scandals, the Vatileak scandals, and this is now something that will be on the desk of Archbishop Parolin, correct?
That's right, yes. The other job that he has is not just obviously with diplomacy, but he also has to overlook and oversee the running of the Curia and the Vatican in general. So his other role is to be a good administrator. Again, he ticks the box there. He's going to be very competent in that regard. So there's hope that he can kind of sort out all the sort of the scandals and the rather dark goings on that went on in the Secretary of State in the past couple of years. Cardinal Bertone was obviously mm-hmm. very deeply affected by all of that. He said when he left last week, just when he had the announcement of his replacement, he took a positive view of his 7 years as Secretary of State, but he did say the last 2 years have been especially difficult. That he called, mentioned crows and vipers within the Vatican, which was rather an unfortunate statement, but at the same time, that's how he saw it.
Yes.
And he sees them as people who are trying to thwart his role as Secretary of State. So hopefully Archbishop Parolin is someone who can sort of resolve that. He is someone who's a diplomat. Cardinal Bertone wasn't a diplomat.
Right.
He comes very much from that group of people who is traditionally Secretaries of State. Cardinal Bertone was the first non-diplomat forever. So that's going to be very positive. He'll already have lots of people on his side. Cardinal Bertone, because he wasn't a diplomat, never really won over the diplomatic corps. I think there was always a bit of resentment that he was chosen and brought in when normally that a diplomat would take that position. So already has a bit of a head start before he even gets there.
This is Jeanette DiMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with Edward Penton, the Register's Rome correspondent, about the latest happenings in Rome. Now, Edward, earlier this week, the first week of September, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI met with former students, and he had a mass with them, I understand. About 50 people attended that mass, and he surprisingly gave the homily. Tell us a little bit about what he said.
That's right. Yes, it was surprising because, as you know, we really didn't think we'd hear from Pope Emeritus again, or perhaps even see him. But thankfully, we have. And he gave a very touching homily, very much vintage Benedict, really,
mm-hmm.
Very clear, very profound, and very wise. Basically, saying drawing on the gospel reading of that Sunday, which is Sunday the 1st of September, about the first will be last. And the last will be first. And he was saying that, essentially, that's something to remember, that it's very important that one doesn't, if one pushes oneself forward, that comes with a lot of responsibility, and it means you have to be even closer in your relationship with God and be especially careful. It doesn't always, it certainly doesn't lead it obviously brings so many, many challenges in its wake. So, it was a very, it was really a homily on humility, essentially. And a strong reflection on that. And basically saying that Christ was at the extreme humiliation of the cross, there is the exaltation of the resurrection that shows that he is God in the same dimensions. So he says that's a model, obviously, of Jesus to follow.
We're so grateful for his words, and thank you for blogging about that and giving us a glimpse into that homily. It's great to hear from Pope Benedict again. And you have also written something else for the Register this in the past 10 days or so, which was really an interesting story. You had got a tip that Pope Francis said that the canonization of John Paul II would be April 27th, the Feast of the Divine Mercy. And that tip was something I don't think anyone else carried. So tell us what you heard.
Yes. Well, it was very interesting. It's somebody I know, somebody who is very reliable, and he said that it was something that the Pope said off the cuff, really. He just was asked, when will the date be of Pope John Paul II's canonization? And he said, basically, well, I'll tell you now if you like. And he just said April the 27th. So very much breaking the protocol. But that's something that Pope Francis is quite renowned for now. And it's no particular problem. I mean, the people around him apparently were all senior officials, and they didn't seem to mind either. So that seems the reason why I wrote it is because it was authentic, and I didn't think there's any denying that's what he said. So, obviously, that the official statement won't come out until the consistory on the saints on the September the 30th. So that's probably best to wait until the definitive date is mentioned. But it's in all likelihood, it's going to be April the 27th next year.
Well, we'll look.
The Feast of Divine Mercy.
Yeah, it would be a wonderful time. So we'll wait to celebrate when that announcement happens, September 30th or thereafter. But it was an interesting story that you wrote. Now, before we end here, we need to talk about what is happening with Syria and the Pope's strong words about the crisis in Syria, his call for peace, and his prayers for peace. He's calling all of us to pray on September 7th. For a day of prayer and fasting for peace. So, but tell us what Pope Francis's words have been at this time of crisis in Syria.
Yes, well, he's basically said, repeated what he's been saying since the beginning of this crisis, which is there must be dialogue, there must be no violence, no intervention in a military sense, and the parties must come together and meet and dialogue. He said any military action would be futile. He said that in a letter to the G20 leaders meeting in St. Petersburg this week. And he's very keen that, you know, that obviously the violence is avoided, particularly because Christians are in the crossfire, and it's going to be extremely dangerous for them if this conflict escalates and worsens. And what's also interesting about this, Jeanette, is that the Vatican have really been on the front foot on this. They've actually written a 6-point peace plan, which they gave to diplomats yesterday.
Wow.
on Thursday, when they had a briefing with all the diplomats accredited to the Holy See, which surprised the diplomats there because they never actually had seen this before. They were actually given a briefing and a 6-point plan in which they feel that, you know, what Syria needs, which is which includes, you know, relaunching the dialogue, obviously, and then making space for minorities such as Christians, but also the Alawites who run Syria, who are Bashar al-Assad's party and people, and also, you know, things like creating a ministry for minorities and asking for the opposition to distance themselves from terrorist groups, and being part of any new constitution. The Christians should be part of any new constitution. So it's quite a forceful 6-point plan, which they hope will go towards restarting the talks, the Geneva 2 talks, they're called, which are supposed to start at the end of this year. So the Vatican's very much playing a key role in this and doing all it can, pulling out all the stops, really, to try and avert conflict and bring them to the negotiating table.
Yes, that's very important work that the Vatican is embarking on, and also very important that we join Pope Francis and the bishops around the world in prayer on September 7th, a day of prayer and fasting for peace in Syria and the rest of the Middle East. And Edward, thank you so much for being with us today, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Edward. When we return, more on the Syria situation with Joan Frawley Desmond. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
John at Bankovic talks about the National Catholic Register.
I recommend the National Catholic Register to all Catholics who want to discover what it means to live their faith in this our day and time. We get the clear, unbiased news of today because the National Catholic Register takes its cue from the mind and the heart of the Church. It really becomes a tool by which we are able to live that abundant life in Jesus Christ and to share that life with others. The National Catholic Register seeks to meet people where they are, seeks to meet people where they are in their walk of faith, where they are practically in their lives at the moment.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Joan Frawley Desmond, is the Register's senior editor. She is an award-winning journalist and has been widely published in Catholic, ecumenical, and secular media. Joan is a graduate of the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies of Marriage and the Family. Recently, she has covered the pressing situation in Syria, examining reactions to the U.S. decision for military action and the moral implications involved. Joan, welcome back to Register Radio.
Hi.
Hi there.
Joan, it's been a while since we've had you on Register Radio. I don't think that you and I have talked in this forum since I began doing Register Radio. So thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Now, we have a very serious topic to talk about today. At the end of August, we heard reports and saw photos of all of these people who were affected by a chemical weapons attack in Damascus in Syria. That attack killed more than 1,400 people, including 400 children. Very, very serious situation there, and the response globally has been quite diverse. Let's talk about what the response has been here in the U.S. How has President Obama responded to this attack?
The president cited the attack in his efforts to engage Senate and House leaders to get them to rethink what is fairly significant public opposition to any military involvement. So first, the administration this week had met with Senate and House panels to lay out the evidence regarding intelligence on the chemical attacks, as well as explain that what they want to do regarding military intervention is a limited military strike with controls on it, no plans, as the president has said, for so-called boots on the ground. There's a lot of concern that this could escalate easily. And so a key issue, all these issues were addressed in the House and Senate meetings where lawmakers said, well, what if it escalates? What if Syria retaliates? All of these concerns were addressed by General Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who acknowledged the possibility that while the administration hopes to make this limited, there's no actual guarantees, as there never is with military intervention. Meanwhile, the president has moved on abroad to the G20 meeting. So in Stockholm this week, he again made the case. I think he's hoping when he's at the G20 meeting that he can gather together more international leaders to back the U.S. Military strike and show kind of common cause across the globe. But so far, he's had very limited success with that. Basically, the White House has tried to kind of summarize what they want to do, and it continues to be to focus on punishing and deterring future chemical attacks by the Assad regime. They insist they have the evidence to prove it was the Assad regime, and also they've added on another argument, which is if they don't take the military strike opportunity, that it could also embolden extremist groups within Syria and the region with fears that others could have access to chemical weapons.
Now, this is not something that's in the bag, so to speak, for Congress. I mean, they are very divided over this. What is expected to happen on the floor for the House and the Senate?
At this point, the House won't be back till next week. They're expected to have at least possibly a full week of debate. They also have other issues on the burner, so it may or may not take up all the time. But it could be several weeks off before there's a decision. And I think, again, There is not much stomach for this. There are so many different issues of concern. First, you have, again, the issue of escalation. You have the issue of what will happen if there is retaliation. I was speaking with Archbishop Broglio the other day, and he was also saying that, you know, military concerned about resources available to respond to an escalation, how that would work. So I think lawmakers will be dealing with all these issues and looking for other ways that the U.S. might respond to the chemical attacks. Both, I think, are very uncertain. That's what news reporting is saying at the moment.
This is Jeanette DeMello with Register Radio. I'm speaking with the Register's senior editor, Joan Frawley Desmond, about the crisis in Syria. Now, Joan, the church's opposition has been unified. Pope Francis has called for a nonviolent resolution. He's called for a day of prayer, of peace and fasting. What have the U.S. bishops said about this? You spoke of Archbishop Bergoglio, but the bishops are quite unified. Tell us about that.
Yes, the U.S. bishops have been unified. They've definitely taken their cues from the Holy Father. I think it's worth noting that Pope Francis wrote a letter with the G20 nations meeting. He wrote a letter to Putin, who is hosting the group in Russia, again asking the nations to lay aside what he said was a futile pursuit of a military solution and work towards a negotiated peace in Syria and provide humanitarian assistance to refugees. The Vatican also called the diplomatic corps accredited to the Holy See for a briefing that explained the church's position. I think it's important to state this, and then I'll note how the U.S. bishops have tried to follow up with this, because I think some news reports and even in Catholic media are suggesting it's either, you know, you support or you don't support the military strike. I think what's very clear that the Vatican is trying to do, and it's taking an increasingly visible position on this issue, is saying, no, there's not just what it sees as a false choice of a military strike or not. What he's saying is, rather, the Pope is saying is, rather than saying, oh, our consciences will be, you know, will be alleviated if we take a military strike, he's saying we really need something more ambitious. We need a negotiated settlement. We need to bring all the people, all the leaders to the table inside the country, but also some regional powers. And we need humanitarian assistance. And I think in his view, the international community has simply not done enough on this. So the U.S. bishops in their letters they've sent two letters to Secretary Kerry, and I'm sure they've also operated behind the scenes. They have repeated this same message. So I think the message has come from the Holy See, and it's been repeated across the board by the U.S. bishops as well at every level that they are able to make a difference.
Now, Joan, we just have 2 minutes left, and you know, when we talk about war, we often talk about the just war theory, which is a theory that has been a long part of the church history and the church discussion. And just to kind of review that and why this may or may not, it seems that it doesn't fit just war theory. And part of that theory is that in order to use military force justly, one must have a just cause. The force must be the last resort. The success of the military action must be probable, and then that there must be a legitimate authority to do so. And there seems to be a number of questions related to a lot of this, the criteria for a just war. Can you speak just for a moment about what you have heard after talking to moral theologians and others about the just war theory?
Well, Jeanette, I think they've approached it from two standpoints. There's a practical, on-the-ground reality, and that is the message coming from Syrian church leaders who say, number one, this is not justified at this time, and number two, it's not going to help. So with one key principle of just war criteria, that the cause must have a reasonable chance of success, right there we have a response from church leaders on the ground saying, we don't think this is successful, and we do think that innocent civilians will be affected by any even so-called limited military strike. There are additional issues that have come up with deterrence policy. In the early days of just war theory with St. Thomas Aquinas and Augustine, they supported deterrence and punishment against transgression as part of just war tradition. But in the 20th century, especially under John Paul, he was critical of U.S. and U.S. actions in Iraq, both in 1991 and 2003. And the view is that, in part, the problem is deterrence policy threatens the use of harm, threatens violence, and some moralists say that that is a violation of church teaching. You cannot threaten violence. So, you know, we're going to still see some debate on this within the community of Christian ethicists, but the general view is for practical and moral reasons, the deterrence policy, and specifically in this situation, does not meet the criteria.
Thank you, Joan, for explaining that to us. And our listeners can find more information about the moral implications of this situation in a story that Joan has written that's on ncregister.com. Joan, thanks so much for being with us, and we join you and the rest of the bishops in prayer for peace.
Thanks, Jeanette.
Thank you so much, Joan. Don't forget, you can listen to the show again by going to ncregister.com. Be sure to look for the picture of the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
It's very easy because EWTN does all the hard work. You just let others know. Tune in, and they can see for themselves what a beautiful gift our church is.
In Mark 16, verse 15, Jesus commanded us to go into the whole world and proclaim the good news to all creation. Those words are the heart of the call of the EWTN media missionaries, volunteers who help create awareness of EWTN in parishes and communities across the United States.
Through EWTN, I've grown in my faith. I can point others to certain programs that provide them with the resources they need to understand their faith.
If you consider what Jesus did for us on the cross, it's a small way to give back to Him.
With as little as 10 minutes a month, you can help spread the word. Call today, 1-205-795-5771, or log on to our website, EWTNmissionaries.com, and find out how easy it is to be an EWTN media missionary.